Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is Wednesday. It's Wednesday, right? Yes, it's Wednesday, the 20th of May, 2020. That's nothing significant. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Busy, busy news day. Holy Frank Tanana, there's a lot of stuff to get to. And let me just tell you right off the top, I don't know for sure. I never know where my mouth will take me, but there could be, since there's so much damn stupidity going on in the world yesterday, there could be some profanities dropped throughout the program, an F-bomb here or there. Just, you know, not everywhere. Not like Dresden in World War II. More like your salad when the waiter brings it over to you at a fancy restaurant and the pepper. You want some pepper on that? It'd be a few grinds of obscenities on there because these people deserve it. As such, consider yourself warned when it comes out. We've got some doozy audio from the ladies. I'm going to need to see some chromosome readouts on that one just to confirm Joy Behar. But the ladies of The View, they're incensed that anybody would take hydroxychloroquine. Poor Joy. All right, Joy. Sign the pledge, the more for us pledge, that you, under no circumstances, no matter what your doctor tells you, should you come down with coronavirus, you will not take hydroxychloroquine. Please sign that, Joy. Have it notarized, or you can just do it on video, and we'll take that as legally binding. Will you do that? Please. You'll hear the audio. You won't believe it. We also have movement in the Flynn case on behalf of his lawyers. They are trying to get rid of Judge Sullivan because he just seems like an awful prick, and you can't blame them for that. So we'll talk about that. We also have the full text of the, what's her face? Susan Rice, God, she's so forgettable. Have you ever met a more forgettable person? The email she sent to herself, the classified section, the day that Trump was inaugurated, the classified section to the email to herself, which is weird in and of itself, has been declassified by Rick Grenell, which is awesome. And she, it's weird how journalists look at this and go, I don't really see anything wrong there. I don't see anything in there at all that's nefarious. Knowing everything we know now, you have to be willfully ignorant or genuinely dishonest to not see anything curious in this email from Susan Rice to Susan Rice on the last day of the Obama administration. She just wanted to get it on the record. So if you don't see that, then I can't help you. It's a Rorschach test for whether or not you are engaged in reality. And sadly, so many people with press credentials are not, in fact, engaged in reality. So we've got that and a whole bunch more. You're going to want to sit tight, provided you can handle a couple of F-bombs here and there, should they come up. I don't know. I'm recording this now, so obviously I don't know where it's going until the end. But I can already tell when I sat down and when I was cutting the audio and when I was getting ready to do this and opening up the various tabs of the news stories I hope to get to, I said to myself, I'm going to say fuck a lot. So you've been warned. I don't want the hate email. Well, I actually don't mind the hate emails, but you've been warned. That part of your hate email, you shouldn't use that kind of language. It's on you. at this point. But as today is Wednesday, and as we do every Wednesday, we have our lovely, lovely sponsor, Ronnie McMullen, the proprietor of GetTheTea.com. We recorded a new commercial, a new phone conversation. That means new products for you to learn about. And appreciate the heck out of this guy. Appreciate the heck out of you guys. So I'm going to put you together right now. Lucky enough to be joined by Ronnie McMullen, our sponsor and the proprietor of GetTheTea.com. How's life for you, Ronnie?
It's great. Even in these trying times, it's great.
It's absolutely. I'm still drinking the tea every day. I got about a half a gallon in the fridge right now. We all know the benefits from Life Change Tea. I've been talking about it for a while now, but you sell so many things at GetTheTea.com. And I noticed one of the tabs is immune support. Everybody's worried about their immune system right now. Obviously, what do you have to boost our immunity naturally?
I've got something in my arsenal that really, really works well with immune boosting, and it's called Allicin Advanced. And what it is, real quickly, is each pill is equal to about 35 cloves of garlic. And if you Google garlic and the benefits of garlic, you're going to see some incredible things, things that it would take 20 minutes to go over, so I won't do it. But it is absolutely powerful. It's going to help you with your immune system. And it's going to make you feel much better in a lot of areas, even with your blood, all kinds of, I mean, it's over the top what this thing does for you. Now, here's another thing, just nice and free. The more fear we have, the more immune suppression we have. So it's really a good time, even though they're starting to open things up, things are starting to look better. It's probably a good time to start picking your spirits up as best you can and know that we're going to be on our way out of this. And so just to kind of keep yourself going, you want to be getting the tea that's going to clean you out, make sure that your digestion's good. It's going to help you absorb things like Allicin Advanced so that your immune system's up. You're going to get some energy. You're going to be like feeling better. Your body chemistry is going to be better. And guess what? You're actually going to have an attitude change that's going to make you feel good. And that's what it's all about.
That is what it's all about. That's why I go to GetTheTea.com. That's why you should go to GetTheTea.com. And you enter promo code Derek at checkout. What do you have for them, Ronnie, when they do that and click apply?
Free shipping. That's right, free shipping. And let me tell you something. This stuff is really wonderful. You know, your listeners have come over to our website and saying good things, so that's really great. So make sure you put Derek inside the coupon code, hit apply. Hit that apply is so important, and you'll get free shipping. Shipping will be on me.
Excellent. You won't regret it. Thank you, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Ronnie McMullen. And thanks, you guys, for going and picking up Get the Tea, Life Change Tea, and the CBD oil. They're the same company, not breaking news there, but appreciate all of it. I get the email. Oh, I ordered this thing, and I'm trying this stuff. And, like, thank you. Excellent. Great. Let's get into the news, shall we? We'll start with a declassified email. Catherine Herridge reported, you know, that right-wing hack. Remember when all the panties were clutched about, or pearls were clutched and panties were wadded, painting couches engaged, the back of the wrist to the forehead, everybody's lightheaded, falling backwards. When Senator Martha McSally referred to Manu Raju of CNN as a liberal hack, and they, oh, he's not a liberal, he's one of the finest journalists working in the world. Oh my God, how dare you say anything? When the Biden campaign last week called Catherine Herridge a right-wing monster, a right-wing hack, I mean, there was no support. It took CBS News like 4 days to finally issue a statement saying, no, she's a fine journalist. Like, wow, it's weird what a difference what you're reporting on makes. Catherine Herridge has been getting information from sources, you know, like journalists are supposed to do, and it's original material. It's direct material. It's not some anonymous person leaning over as they mop you up, or as you mop yourself up in bed saying, oh, by the way, Donald Trump threw a roll of toilet paper today, angry that it was only 2-ply. Did you know he gets 2 scoops of ice cream? That's what constitutes journalism. Anonymous sources told me today and this morning when I was mopping myself up and wiping my face that the president demands 2 scoops of ice cream while everybody else only gets 1 scoop of ice cream. Have you ever heard anything so monstrous in your life?
I believe Hitler once had 2 scoops of ice cream, and there you go. That's journalism now. But Catherine Herridge is actually getting source material, original documents, first and foremost. Rick Grinnell, the acting director of National Intelligence, has been declassifying a whole bunch of things. And the liberal media is wildly upset about this. It's amazing to me. It's their job to get information. And now they're getting information. It's not secret, you know, pillow talk. It is not anonymous sources. It's not even people, well, we'll talk to you on background. It's the actual original material, the direct material. And the journalists are going, I'm not even going to look at it. This is ridiculous. We shouldn't even be talking about this. Why are we wasting our time? Yeah, because it's fucking journalism, you pieces of shit. See, I told you. I warned you, didn't I? Anyway, this is an email that Susan Rice sent to herself. Yes, it's right there, to Susan Rice, from Susan Rice, and also CC'd on there is somebody called Curtis Reed, probably her personal assistant. Now, weirdly, this is dated 1/20/2017 at 2:15 and 33 seconds p.m., which means the President of the United States was thankfully and mercifully no longer Barack Obama at that time. For the past 15 minutes and 33 seconds, the President of the United States has been Donald John Trump. But for some reason, Susan Rice ran back to her office after the inauguration, or ran somewhere, or maybe she still had her BlackBerry. She shouldn't have, but hey, what are you going to do? Should have been shut down. The account should have been shut down. Everything should have been locked out. And she decided to send herself an email. Now, it's weird, isn't it? Right? Did you send yourself an email? I mean, I sometimes forward emails to myself that I've had exchanges with in the past, but that's because I wanted to keep it near the top of the inbox for when I got near a computer. Like, oh yeah, there's the unread email up at the top, rather than have to search for it and try and remember certain keywords or whatever to try and find it. The weird thing here is, though, Susan Rice is sending this email to herself on the day that her email address was no longer going to be active. So she would not have had access to this note to herself, even really shouldn't have, at the time that she sent it. So what was the purpose of sending this email to herself? The purpose was to cover her ass, to get somewhere on the record what she wanted on the record. Her side of whatever story that might come out eventually related to all of this stuff. What did she write to herself? The classification? The subject line was note to file. It was classified top secret. Why is she, as a former government employee, sending top secret information? Maybe that was added later, who knows? But why is she sending note to file? Note to file to herself. File where? File what? She's done with the job. She wrote on January 5th, and this is what's interesting because I've seen a couple of people note this. One of whom is a friend of mine, Rob George, used to work at the New York Post, used to be an editorial writer at the New York Post. Now he is an editorial writer at the New York Daily News. Somehow he went from being a fairly conservative guy to being a very liberal guy. He tweeted out what I'm about to read to you, the same Catherine Herridge tweet with the text of the email. And he said, I literally cannot find, and then he goes caps lock, so you know he gets serious. One thing in caps lock. Wrong in this. Rice, in real time, says that Comey found the frequency of conversations between Flynn and Kislyak was unusual, and the Obama administration should be careful in sharing classified information with Flynn. The rest of it we'll deal with in a second. But the important part here in this liberal media interpretation spin, I should say, of this Susan Rice email is he saying, Rice in real time says that Comey found it. She didn't say it in real time. The meeting to which she refers, the meeting to which she is about which she is writing in the email, took place on January 5th. This email was sent 15 days later. That's more than 2 weeks if you're playing the home game.
which means it's not in real time, which means that at some point on the last day of the Obama administration, she thought to herself, oh, shit. If something comes out about that and people know that I gotta cover my ass. I gotta cover Obama's ass. I've gotta find a way to make sure that I'm on record somewhere so it doesn't seem suspicious that because if you're caught spying on the incoming administration, it's not a good look. I mean, if you're a Democrat, we found out. If you're a Democrat, no big shake, no big deal. Who cares? Just move along. Nothing to see here. But Susan Rice wasn't willing to take that risk. And I think most people wouldn't be willing to take that risk when you're committing violations of fellow Americans' civil rights. It's bad enough. But the incoming director, the National Security Advisor, they might find out that you've been violating their civil rights. So that could come out. There could be some legal unpleasantness. So you want to get on the record somewhere so that when you come up with your story later on, you can say, well, I was saying this all along, even when I was in the Obama administration, which would be a lie because, again, it had been over for 15 minutes and 33 seconds, mercifully. So anyway, this is not in real time. This is 2 weeks later, 2 weeks and a day later. She writes, on January 5th, now remember, this is an email to herself. On January 5th, following a briefing by IC leadership on Russian hacking during the 2016 presidential election, which we now know was garbage, President Obama led a brief follow-up conversation with FBI Director Jim Comey and Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates in the Oval Office. Vice President Biden and I were also present. Hey, Joe. Now, Biden has a viable, believable excuse in that he probably doesn't remember anything. He probably doesn't know what he's doing right now. She continues, President Obama began the conversation by stressing his continued commitment to ensuring that every aspect of this issue is handled by the intelligence and law enforcement communities, quote, by the book, end quote. The president stressed that he is not asking about, intimating, or instructing anything from a law enforcement perspective. Yeah, no, it doesn't sound suspicious, this email. The president made sure. He reiterated that our law enforcement team needs to proceed as it normally would by the book. Now, it's one paragraph and two mentions of by the book. And President Obama saying in there that he's not ordering anything. He is not instructing anything. Right. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We've all seen the movies. We've all heard the stories of the mob. I'm not telling you that Bobby's got to end up in a bad way, but, you know, people fall into meat grinders all the time. But I'm certainly not ordering it. That's what you do when you don't want to be on record directly ordering something, but you want to make sure that the people, your goon squad, knows exactly what you're talking about. You really want it done, but you can't say you want it done. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know what I mean, say no more. It continues. From a national security perspective, however, President Obama said he wants to be sure that as we engage with the incoming team, again, this is being written, the incoming team is in, engage with the incoming team, we are mindful to ascertain if there is any reason that we cannot share information fully as it relates to Russia. Now, at this point, the Obama administration knew full well that the Russian collusion hoax was just that. It was a lie. It was a fraud. It was a joke. They knew where the Steele dossier had come from. They knew what had gone on during the election. They had been bugging Carter Page. They'd been unmasking people at a record pace. They knew full well that there was no there there. But this, again, is a cover-your-ass email. Now comes the paragraph that was, until yesterday, blacked out, classified, redacted, as they say. She writes, quote, Director Comey affirmed that he is proceeding, quote, by the book. Wow, it's a third mention of by the book. If you are an honest person, you don't have to keep telling everybody you're an honest person. If you're going by the book, you don't have to keep telling everybody you're going by the book. As it relates to law enforcement, from a national security perspective, Comey said he does have some concerns that incoming NSA, National Security Advisor, Flynn is speaking frequently with Russian Ambassador Kislyak. Comey said that could be an issue as it relates to sharing sensitive information. President Obama asked if... Now, why is it an issue? What is the FBI? FBI deals with a lot of things. They've dealt with transitions before. One would think that somebody talking to their incoming, their counterpart in foreign governments would be normal, because it is normal. And in fact, I'm going to play for you in a second audio of the Obama administration at the time saying it is normal. But when you don't like the people coming in, when you don't trust the people coming in, when you vehemently oppose the people coming in, you can say, well, that's wildly abnormal. People have a way of rationalizing things that they themselves have done, but being disgusted when somebody else does it. Right? It's wrong that somebody would beat their children. How dare they? We must throw the book at them. Now I'm going to go and beat my children. That sort of thing. It's always the me thinks thou doth protest too much sort of vibe that people give off. Anyway, incoming NSA Flynn is speaking frequently with Russian Ambassador Kislyak. Comey said that could be an issue as it relates to sharing sensitive information. He's going to be the National Security Advisor. He should have access to everything at the time. He's also a three-star general, which is a lot more impressive and shows a lot more dedication to the United States of America than being a 6'7" douchebag who has no law enforcement background but managed to politically finagle your way into heading the FBI, just to pick an example off the top of my head. Obama asked if Comey was saying that the NSC should not pass sensitive information related to Russia to Flynn. Comey replied, quote, potentially. Potentially. Now, Comey is an unelected bureaucrat. He is a political appointee. Now, granted, his term as director of FBI and the director of FBI always is a 10-year term, but they can be fired at any point, as Comey found out. Not soon enough, but he found out. So that a political appointee could tell or make a decision or advise that the incoming administration be kept in the dark about certain things because he doesn't like the cut of somebody's jib. Well, it was well known that President Obama did not like Michael Flynn, just didn't like Michael Flynn. So if you're trying to ingratiate yourself to somebody, you could do a lot worse than bad-mouthing somebody you know that person doesn't like, right? Anyway, Comey replied, potentially. He added that he has no indication thus far that Flynn has passed classified information to Kislyak, but he noted that, quote, the level of communication is unusual, end quote. That was the classified section. Then just to put a fine point on it, the last two sentences were, the president asked Comey to inform him if anything changes in the next few weeks that should affect how we share classified information with the incoming team. Comey said he would. But back to that classified new material and the journalists who look at that and say, there's nothing there. I don't see anything. Why? That could mean any number of things, or this seems fairly innocuous. You have to remember at the time that everybody in that room had read and requested that General Flynn's name be unmasked in the FISA documents, in the transcripts, in the spying that went on Ambassador Kislyak's phone. They'd read the transcripts of the, I believe it was three phone conversations. Now, how is that level of communication over a three-month transition? How is that unusual? Or a two-and-a-half-month transition? How is that unusual? Are you only allowed one phone call to anybody?
Maybe you can bump that up to two. But if you go to three, why, then the intelligence apparatus of the United States of America shall slam down upon you like the sword of Damocles. It is not for Flynn to decide any of this. It is not for President Obama to decide any of this. The job of an outgoing administration is to be as cooperative as possible with an incoming administration. And in that sense, you could say that the Obama administration did do that. The if as possible part. They, liberals, are incapable of being fully cooperative with anybody who isn't one of them. So they did as much as they possibly could without sticking a pen in their counterpart's neck or taking cyanide tablets themselves or whatever. So in that sense, yeah, I suppose they did everything that was possible. It just was wrong. It was sketchy and may well have been illegal. Add to that the fact that Flynn and these people had read the transcripts of those phone conversations between Ambassador Kislyak and Michael Flynn. They knew full well what was said, and if he had passed on classified information to the Russians, they could have, and Lord knows they would have, charged him with a crime, right? That would be against the law to pass along classified information to an enemy of the United States. Hell, it'd be a crime to pass it along to an ally of the United States. It would be a crime to pass it along to anybody, unless, of course, you're Hillary Clinton. Then you can put it on your secret server under the stairs right next to where Harry Potter sleeps, and you can forget about the whole thing. That this is being portrayed as nothing tells you more about the people portraying it as nothing than it does anything related to reality, journalism, decency, national security, honor, dignity, or anything else of the sort. These words that people like Susan Rice and James Comey and Barack Obama and Joe Biden like to attach to their lapels as if a proud scarlet letter. I am just too honorable. Again, if you have to tell people you are something, you are not. If you have to tell people you are smart, you are not. If you have to tell people you are funny, you are not. If you have to tell people you're a good, honest person, run away from them as quickly as possible. And God, whatever you do, do not elect them to anything. There's going to be a lot more coming out about this email. As Rick Grinnell goes through, he had that briefcase filled with documents that he brought over to the Justice Department. A whole bunch of things that he now has the ability to declassify. So what this tells us is, A, Rick Grinnell deserves some gigantic civilian award. Fucking carve his head into Mount Rushmore already, right now. Because this stuff needs to be exposed and needed to be exposed a long time ago. Real journalists would have been digging and asking for this rather than downplaying it when it's finally released, going, I don't really see anything here. I don't know what the problem is. So Rick Grinnell is a hero. This also tells you that everybody in a position before Rick Grinnell came along to have declassified these things or to have recommended to the President of the United States to declassify these things is, and again, excuse my French, a worthless fucking piece of shit. Why were they sitting on this information? Why did we not find this out until now? The only way to prevent abuses of power and abuses of position are to expose them. It's to expose them, to show it, to shine sunlight all over it, to expose these people. Instead, the people who are in these positions, who failed the President of the United States for 3 years, sat silently, either incuriously, not even bothering to ask about this sort of stuff, or knowing this stuff and going, well, what are you going to do? I'll leave that sitting there on my desk. While the Russia hoax rolled on. while this whole scam from the Mueller investigation to the sainting, the deification of Barack Obama, to the rise of Joe Biden, to the rehabilitated image of Susan Rice after her lies about Benghazi, all this raged on, and they were getting book deals that were huge. They were getting speaking engagements that made them rich beyond their wildest dreams. They were being deified by the media. They were getting positions in academia, many of them no-show positions, like Joe Biden, who became a professor emeritus at the University of Pennsylvania, I think it was, never taught a class, but got a check. All of this was going on while the information, whether it's illegal or not, is going to be up for prosecutors and a judge to decide. But this is some shady shit right here. And that it was kept from the public. And that journalists didn't have any interest in finding it, didn't get an interest in seeing it. There was no FOIA request demanding justification as to why that paragraph I read you was classified. There were no speculation. There were no leaks. Nothing. A lot of people saw this. Nobody said anything. That tells you, A, that President Trump was badly served by many of the people in positions where they should have been more interested in their jobs than their social lives, and B, just how corrupt our media and intelligence agencies are and how intertwined they are. They're like an orgy scene in a porno. Everybody's wrapped around everybody else. And on the outside is Donald Trump and a few people who came to Washington, D.C. to try and shake things up. And you know what? The orgy doesn't want to break up. The orgy just got a new shipment of personal lube. They're not ready to call it a day. They're ready to keep going. Hopefully heads will roll, people will be fired, people's reputations will be tarnished forever, and some people are going to have to answer some questions with some very, very expensive lawyers in the room, I hope, just like they did to General Michael Flynn for 3 years. In short, fuck these people. They deserve bad things to happen to them, and when they do, we should all smile ear to ear. They won't end up in jail, but they should end up in the poorhouse, just like they did to General Flynn. Now, on the issue of the conversations and the frequency with which, now we're talking about 3 phone calls that we know of. If there are more, go ahead. If you can make the case that he should not, that General Flynn should not have been talking to Russia as much as he did, make that case. They weren't making that case. They were saying that talking to him at all was weird. Now, if there was something in those transcripts, something that should be known, why didn't that leak? The Obama administration leaked everything they possibly could. The only thing we know about those phone conversations is that General Flynn in late December told them not to overreact to the sanctions that the Obama administration weekly put into place as a response to the meddling in the election, as they called it, which amounted to a few thousand dollars in Facebook ads. Nothing major, nothing dramatic, nothing at all changed any votes. Well, the frequency and the fact of seemed to be bothering Susan Rice, Barack Obama, James Comey, and Joe Biden, and Sally Yates in that conversation, didn't it? Just judging by her CYA email that Susan Rice wrote to herself. So let's go in the Wayback Machine to a few days before Susan Rice wrote that email to herself, January 13th, 7 days to be exact, a week if you're playing the home game, January 13th, 2017. This is an exchange between one of the few reporters in the world that's actually a reporter. I can't remember his name, but he works for the Associated Press, I believe, and he covers the State Department. He gives everybody a grilling. He really should have a Sunday show. Whoever he is, I can't remember him. But this is a grilling between the reporter and the spokesman for the State Department about the reports that were discussed in that January 5th meeting.
since that January 5th meeting that Susan Rice decided to memorialize, the Washington Post had gotten a leak about the phone calls and the unmasking of Michael Flynn, and it ran in a column by David Ignatius. It became a scandal. Oh, my God, he's talking to Russians. Can you believe it? Yes, we can believe it. And why do I say that, yes, we can believe it? Because the Obama administration can believe it. Every administration does this. Every administration talks to their incoming administration, talks to their foreign counterparts to just sort of get the lay of the land so they can hit the ground running, a point I've made 1,000 times on this show. So listen to the Obama State Department. It's about 1.5 minutes, this exchange, question, answer, where they say this is not unusual, this is not a big deal, there's no problem with it. If the Trump administration, the incoming Trump administration, wants to talk to foreign leaders, that's, they're right. They should do that. Here's the audio.
You probably have seen reports starting yesterday, but then more of them this morning, about contact between the incoming national security advisor and the Russian ambassador. I'm just wondering, from the State Department's point of view, is this something that's of concern at all? Or I'll just leave it there and then follow up.
Again, not necessarily. I've seen the reports. I don't think they've been confirmed or corroborated yet. But he's part of the transition team. That's really for them to speak to and how they are engaging. I mean, the president-elect is also engaged on his own with many world leaders. So I don't want to speculate, and I don't want to.
This building doesn't see anything necessarily inappropriate about contact between members of the incoming administration and foreign officials, no matter what country they're from, right?
No. And again, this has been ongoing. I mean, we stand ready if they want to work through the State Department to contact some of these individuals. But we have no comment or no problem with them doing such on their own.
What? We see no problem with that? Yeah, it's perfectly normal. They can call anybody they want. They're going to be in charge. They got to be ready. Yet the president, the vice president, the acting attorney general, the director of the FBI, and the national security advisor sure saw something unsavory and problematic with that, didn't they? No. What they saw was an opportunity. What they saw was an opportunity to go after Michael Flynn. That's what they saw. And Susan Rice needed to be on record trying to set the narrative that this was just concern, out of concern that they were unmasking left and right Michael Flynn and leaking his name and the story to the Washington Post. That's what this was. That's all this was. That's all this ever was just another little opportunity to try and screw with the Trump administration. Our country exists and has been so successful because we accept the results of elections, because people who hold differing political views, when they lose, when somebody loses to somebody who believes the antithesis of what the outgoing person believed, they do not attempt to sabotage it. They do not attempt to screw them over. They do not try to criminalize political differences. They accept the will of the people. They accept the rule of law, and they work together, even if it is towards something that they find abhorrent. The continuity of government is what matters. And it didn't to the Obama administration. They wanted to damage the Trump administration, and they set into motion all sorts of things to do just that. And they tried to couch it as, well, it's just very suspicious, yet publicly. And commonsensically, it was not problematic. In our media, I can't even say they fell for it. They were willing participants in it, eager participants. And now they're so emotionally and credibility-wise and career-wise invested in it that as the House of Cards begins to crumble, they refuse to acknowledge that it was a house at all, that there were any cards in play, that there was anything below board, shady, weird, even odd, even though there's the Obama administration saying there's nothing wrong with what they're doing. That's what administrations do. This is the greatest scandal in the history of American politics. Watergate was a joke compared to this. The left always says, Nixon, he sicked the IRS on his political opponents. No, he didn't. He talked about it. Not saying Nixon was a good dude, but he only talked about sicking the IRS on his political opponents. Barack Obama actually did it. Barack Obama did much worse. And if Barack Obama did this to the incoming Trump administration, if they did this to General Flynn and the apparatus loyal to Barack Obama pursued him and are still pursuing him to this day, this doggedly, what else did they do? What else did they do that we don't know about? Well, we may never know about it because, well, the people whose job it would be to find out have no interest in even acknowledging that anything weird went on in the first place. Meanwhile, General Flynn is still in court fighting to get the case against him dropped, the case that the Justice Department has said should be dropped, the case that the defense team has motioned to be dropped, and the judge, Judge Sullivan, is saying, well, not only am I not going to drop the charges yet, I'm going to appoint somebody to come in and advocate for why I shouldn't drop the charges, and moreover, advocate for why I should add new charges. Now, judges don't get to add new charges. So Sidney Powell, the attorney for Michael Flynn, went to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals to try to force the dismissal of the case and to reassign the case to a new judge, since Judge Sullivan has proven himself to be on a rooting side, not the side of justice, but the side against Flynn. He already accused Flynn of treason in open court. Even the government, even the Obama hacks that were bringing these charges didn't bother to go that far. In her writ of mandamus, Sidney Powell writes, quote, the function of a judge is to call balls and strikes. This is an umpire who's decided to steal the public attention from the players and focus it on himself. He wants to pitch, bat, run bases, and play shortstop. In truth, he is way out in left field. I would love it if this judge gets publicly humiliated and this case ripped from him. I would love it if these Obama hacks see the final little extinguishing of their last little ember of this fraud that they perpetrated on the American public and damaged the Trump presidency. I want to witness that look on their face as badly as I want to witness them lose come November 3rd. We'll find out soon how this goes, but make no mistake about it. These are bad people. There's really no simpler way to put it. These are really bad, bad people. Speaking of really, really bad, bad people, Congressman from Pennsylvania, Mike Kelly, was on The View yesterday. Now, Mike Kelly's, you know, fairly unremarkable, except that he's an elderly fellow who happens to be diabetic, who also survived coronavirus. Now, he's on The View. I assume it's because The View is desperate for guests. I want to play this clip for you because he details what he went through. He details his ordeal. And it also, it gives you a hint of maybe what you want to look for if you're trying to figure out what symptoms there are, because the list of symptoms are seemingly never ending and ever evolving. So here's somebody who went through it. But near the end of this clip, you will hear Joy Behar's voice. And for that, I apologize ahead of time. Congressman Kelly took hydroxychloroquine. Now, it's just something that he mentions in the course of how he tells his story about how he survived with his pre-existing conditions. Joy Behar is outraged by this. Now, Joy Behar did not go to medical school. When Joy Behar would have gone to medical school, the prescribed treatment for most ailments would have been a good bleeding. So that's just to tell you how old Joy is. But Joy is disgusted, shocked. You seem so smart. You don't seem like a moron at all. Why are you taking this dangerous, dangerous drug? And I want to play this clip for you, and I want to set it up this way so that you don't miss it, so that you hear it the way you should hear it, fully aware of what is coming. Joy Behar is shocked that Congressman Kelly would take hydroxychloroquine because it's so dangerous. It's a deadly drug. Of course, it's been around since the 30s, regularly prescribed for any number of things for 70 plus years, more probably. Commonly given to Americans who suffer from rheumatoid arthritis or who have lupus, in addition to people traveling to the continent of Africa to prevent malaria. I had a doctor call into my radio show yesterday and explain why and how, at least in theory, hydroxychloroquine works, because on cells there are receptors, and those receptors, the older you get, the more receptors your cells have. The men have more cells and more receptors, and so it's more opportunities for the virus to get into those cells, reproduce, destroy that cell, poof, it explodes like a balloon, and then there are a bunch more viruses going around getting into more cells and receptors, and they just reproduce that way. They can't reproduce outside of cells. What hydroxychloroquine does is it prevents those receptors from being able to be invaded, if you will, by the virus. That's what hydroxychloroquine does. That's how it stops the spread of malaria in the body. It doesn't, you know, a mosquito with malaria bites you, malaria gets into your body. It doesn't somehow harden your skin so that mosquito needle can't get in your arm. You've got it. It just prevents malaria viruses from reproducing so that your body's immune system can defeat it without being overwhelmed by it. See, your body's immune system starts attacking the second some foreign virus gets into your body. And if the virus hasn't produced enough, hasn't reproduced enough, hasn't invaded a cell through these receptors, it dies off. You've beaten the virus. Viruses win because they reproduce faster than the body can defeat them. But they can't reproduce if they can't get in the cells. And what hydroxychloroquine does is prevents viruses from getting into cells. Doesn't work for everybody, but in theory, that's how it works. And that's why it's being used elsewhere in the world, just not in this country, because Donald Trump said nice things about it, and anything Donald Trump supports must be destroyed. So with that in mind, I want you to pay attention to what Joy Behar says after Congressman Kelly explains what he went through and what his doctor advocated him and prescribed for him, because her reaction is telling. It's telling in how damaging the media truly is in this country at demonizing a drug that is almost as old as Joy Behar, does not cause death, despite what the reports are, because otherwise it would be a death sentence. No lupus patient, for example, would go, so my medicine here is says I got a 50-50 chance that it'll work, it'll help me, or that it'll just kill me. Like, I'm not really comfortable with those odds, doc. Or somebody with rheumatoid arthritis, the doctor says, I need you to take this pill once a day and report back to me if you have any headaches or sudden, violent, unexplained death. All right, will you do that? Wait a sec. What was the second thing you mentioned there, Doc? Of course, for medicine to be approved, it doesn't work that way. It has to have a very, very low, if non-existent, mortality rate. It can have side effects. It causes hair growth in your ears, or it causes diarrhea or something like that. But mass death is not something that the FBI goes, well, as long as you put a warning label on the bottle, people will know and they can make their own decisions. That's not the way medicine, pharmacology works in this country. It might work that way in China, but not here. But Joy Behar seems to think it works that way. And Joy Behar reaches millions of people every day. And a lot of people will get coronavirus. And a lot of people could, might, maybe be helped the way that Congressman Kelly was helped. Yet if they listen to Joy Behar, they will be scared shitless to the point that they will not take even their doctor's advice. In other words, Joy Behar, the CNNs, the MSNBCs, the mainstream media, the New York Times, and all of that, they will actively and are actively responsible for people's deaths, for people defying their doctor's best course of action, even though there are countless cases of people who are recovered because of taking hydroxychloroquine. And in fact, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, not some unknown group, said in a press release back on April 28th that hydroxychloroquine has about a 90% chance of helping COVID-19 patients, not late on in the infection, not long after the people are really, really deathly ill, but at the very beginning in particular, 90% odds. Wouldn't you take those if you got sick? Congressman Kelly did. Joy Behar apparently wouldn't. And I'm okay with that. As long as she actually doesn't, should she ever get this thing. Anyway, listen to this clip from The View.
Congressman, this is Megan. You are 72 years old and you are a type 2 diabetic. So that puts you in a category of those who are particularly vulnerable to this virus. Can you walk us through your symptoms, how sick you were, and how quickly did this disease come on to you?
Yeah, you know, Megan, that's really a good point, because I thought at first I just had some strain of the flu. I didn't really recognize it as something that I hadn't had before. My wife, though, was very aware of it. She says, you know what? I mean, you're sleeping with two blankets on. You're still cold. You're not eating. You have no sense of taste. And when you sleep, you're sleeping like 16 to 18 hours a day and you're still tired. Now, you know, fortunately, I didn't have the respiratory problem. But I got to my doctor, Dr. DiCuccio at the Butler in Butler here. He very quickly got me tested. I went into the Butler Hospital, the drive-thru, got tested. Within 24 hours, they told me, listen, you have the virus. So what we want you to do is stay home and we'll prescribe stuff. So Z-Pak, which most people use, and then the hydroxychloroquine, I took it. So maybe that reduced the effects on me, but I didn't have the respiratory part, which is a real blessing.
Did you just say that you took the hydroxychloroquine? I'm not, my sound
yes,
is
ma'am.
A little weird.
Yes, I took it.
Wow. I can't believe anybody with a brain would take that stuff, but you seem like an intelligent guy. You're a representative in Congress.
Yeah.
Why would you take that drug? There are terrible consequences.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that's your view. That's not my view, and we're on The View. But let me just say this to you. In my case, right. I can't say definitively that that's what cured me, but I can say definitively that I took it, and I can say that I went through a period of time that I was sick. I came out of it within about 9 days, and then I self-quarantined for another month on top of that. So if you stay within the parameters of what's the guidance, and if you're smart about what you do, you stay safe, you keep other people safe by staying away from them, I don't think there's anything stupid about that. I still think I'm a relatively pretty intelligent guy, but I don't tell anybody there's a one size fits all. I say, go to the doctors that you have faith in, listen to what they say. If your doctor says, don't take it, then don't take it. My doctor, but you know what? We have something that we think could possibly work, and we're going to give it to you.
First off, all that noise, the dinging, the buzzing, the reminder sounds, and then the computer word voice is just an indication that the dumbasses on The View don't know how to silence their computers. They're all doing their show from remote. They're in different places, and they don't turn their phones off. They don't put their phones on silent. They don't disconnect their phones from their Wi-Fi so that every little reminder comes through and chimes on their computers because, like I said, they're fucking dumb. And speaking of fucking dumb, you know, every once in a while I wish we'd lost the Revolutionary War so we could still be British and toss around the word cunt, you know, the way that they do. They just do. They could, it's something about a British guy that can do that. They don't mean it in the way I would mean it towards Joy Behar, but I would like to be able to use it, but that would be inappropriate, so I'm not going to, even though I did. But could you imagine
Wait, I thought you seem smart. Don't you know the deadly consequence that drug will kill? You're lucky to be alive, my God.
You would think that the bigger threat to human life is a drug that's been around for 70 plus years, not the virus that's been around for 6 months. Watching The View. Now, how many people sitting at home who, if they're watching The View, they're already a little bit slow, they're a little bit lazy on the uptake, not particularly bright people. How many people watching that are going, wait, Joy says that this drug is deadly. I probably shouldn't take it. If you know, they get sick, they go to their doctor, and the doctor says, well, I want to prescribe to you hydroxychloroquine and zithromycin or zinc or whatever, and I want you to take this because I think that will help prevent you from getting worse and it'll help you recover faster. And how many people are going to go, no, doc, no way. Joy Behar knows this stuff, and she says that's worse than the disease itself. I'd rather take my chance. Why don't you just give me some vitamin C and some echinacea and call it a day? Because Joy Behar told me that hydroxychloroquine is deadly. Meanwhile, there are hundreds of thousands, millions of people with arthritis and lupus across the country going, what the fuck are you talking about? I take this stuff every single day to help me live a better life. This thing, this drug is not deadly. It is not poison. But because of the reporting, because of the demonization, because of the bastardization of reality when related to hydroxychloroquine, there are lots of people out there only exposed to the lie. And make no mistake, it is a lie. It is a complete and total fraud being perpetrated on the American public by the left. I don't think that Joy Behar is doing it from a nefarious point of view, like, say, the primetime lineups of CNN and MSNBC. They know what they're doing. Joy Behar is just an idiot who doesn't know any better. She doesn't get it. She's stupid. She just goes along, well, Rachel Maddow said that it'll kill you, so it'll see you. But this is an ABC News product talking about a drug that is proven safe for decades for human consumption on their air saying, well, it's a deadly drug. Can you take that? It's a testament to the power of the media. It's a testament to the power of stupid. You cannot overcome stupid. You can overcome an awful lot, but dead to rights, complete stupid. There is no cure for. So if Joy gets sick, I hope she doesn't take hydroxychloroquine. Joy's up there in age. I hope she refuses to take it as a matter of principle. Because I don't think her feeble brain could understand if her doctor said, you should take this, and she took it and recovered. I don't think she could handle that. I think that it would cause her brain to implode because, not implode, not explode, because vacuums tend to collapse on themselves. Finally, today, looking at the New York Post, this is so pathetic. Tell me again how liberalism isn't a cult. Headline, LA clothing brand putting Fauci, Cuomo, and Newsom names on underwear. Women's underwear. Now, who wouldn't want that? Gavin Newsom would probably bang you. He's got a nice history of infidelity. Dr. Fauci probably would just like to stare at his own name. He seems to love his own name. And Andrew Cuomo, if the idea of a guy who essentially through ignorance and lack of interest ordered indirectly the deaths of 6,000 plus senior citizens turns you on, only reversing his deadly order 2 months after he made it. If that turns you on, then you're a sick puppy. Yes. The designers behind an LA-based clothing retailer are celebrating some of the people who impressed them during the coronavirus pandemic by placing their names front and center on some underwear. Kavana, which describes itself as a profit-for-purpose brand, liberals. they are stupid fucking people, has released a line of limited edition underpants. Limited, yeah, they're limited to the number that they sell. It's embroidering on shitty cheap underwear. Underpants featuring the names of Governors Andrew Cuomo and Gavin Newsom, as well as leading immunologist and donut legend Dr. Anthony Fauci, the latter of whom is currently the president's on the president's coronavirus task force. Quote, "We are living in unlikely times, and we heard you loud and clear that you wanted to show their appreciation." That you wanted to show their appreciation? These people are idiots, like I said. That's a direct quote. "Appreciation with more than a thank you," wrote Gavana, or Canava, in its product description for Fauci bikini briefs. The brand is also advertising Cuomo-embraced lower-cut undies, described as being perfect for anyone thirsty for the New York governor, as well as Newsom hipster briefs for those loving on the California governor. How fucked up do you have? These people are really fucked up. Do they come preloaded with herpes, or do you have to get them from Newsom? Nah, that's wrong. That's wrong. Let Newsom have the fun of spreading it. These people are insane. These leftists are nuts. They're bad people. I keep telling you they're bad people. And I only keep saying it because they are really, truly bad people. Avoid them. Vote against them. Vote against them every chance you get, and convince anybody you can to vote against them as well. And then convince anybody that you can't convince to vote against them not to vote. That's the best we can do. The future of the country is really at stake come November. That is all the time we have. The future of this podcast is a certainty. That's all the time we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with another exciting episode. Thank you for listening, telling a friend, tuning in, and all that good stuff. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, and you can the website to help out the program, as many of you have, and I deeply, deeply appreciate it. Big shout out to Kathy in Texas. Not going to give out her last name. Very generous, and thank you, Kathy. I appreciate it more than you know. Be safe out there. Be sane out there. More importantly, we'll get through this crap. I'll see you tomorrow.
I can't believe anybody with a brain would take that stuff, but you seem like an intelligent guy. You're a representative in Congress. Yeah. Why would you take that drug? There are terrible consequences.